1027 Business with Michael Avery.
I love dogs, and we decided to get a Labrador puppy last year. It was a few months before we knew that our lives would be changed forever with the country forced into a hard lockdown. We just recently moved into Parkview, and we thought, yep, now's the time to get a puppy. And as serendipity would have it, we picked our puppy up 2 days before lockdown, when she was old enough to leave her mom. And just before lockdown started, I must say, I've never bonded with a dog, and I've had a few through the course of my life, like Luna before. And I know our hot listeners love pets too, but did you know that the pet industry is a booming global business? And two South African entrepreneurs have recently won a global award for their pet care brand. I'm sure you'll recognize it. Rogs, Paul Fuller and Irene Robenheimer started the company a quarter of a century ago and have built it into a formidable player in this fast-growing pet industry space. They now employ 250 people. They've got a presence in 90 countries, thousands of products. Irene, welcome to Hot Business. I love the Rogs brand. I've got to put it out there. But how did you get into the pet accessory business and the pet business in the early 90s?
Well, Michael, before I answer that question, just firstly, I want to congratulate you on your choice of dog. I've also got a Labrador. I've got a chocolate one called Mango. He tests every product before you get to have it, so hopefully they'll be well tested for Labradors. But to answer your question, I mean, Paul and I came back for many years of traveling overseas in 95 and started, we tried various enterprises to try and earn a living. And the only one that really took off was making sunglass cords. We were yachting in our days overseas, and we used to hang our sunglasses around our neck. So these old cords was a sport accessory line. And from there, we started making watch straps out of webbings and so on. And the watch straps sort of like became dog collars. And that happened to be at a time that the pet industry was evolving faster than the sport accessory side. Or should I rather say the sport accessory side is highly competitive. And we made the move to pets and have never looked back from then. And it's given us a lifestyle where our pets can come to the office. And we've had a focus on pet accessories since then.
It's such an interesting story, and I'm sure that making money in the pet accessory business wasn't a walk in the park in the early days. What do you remember from the early forays into the business to where you are now? I mean, a global enterprise. How did that evolution take place?
Sure, that's a long story. But it's been step by step, and honestly, if we look back on it now, it was just the willingness of trying things. We've made many mistakes along the way. We've bumped our heads, we've made bad products, we've made bad decisions, and the idea has just been to stay nimble, recognize what we're doing, and adapting our plan along the way. So it wasn't a master plan that we had carved out 25 years ago that we've been following relentlessly, but hard work is certainly part of it, and adapting our plan along the way has been part of it. The pet industry has been growing and booming, so we're fortunate to be in that industry. It happens to be an industry that we're passionate about, and it's a fun industry, a lot of good folks in the pet industry. So that's been a journey for us. We export to many markets, it grows our volumes, but South Africa also remains a strong market for us, and a market is very close to us because we learn firsthand. We can trial products here, we can learn our lessons much quicker. We do our distribution direct to retail, so we're in direct contact with our customers and in many cases our consumers. So it's been a strong market for us, and we produce many of our products locally here too, so that's an added muscle for us.
Fantastic South African homegrown success story, that. And I just want to zoom out and look at that big trend, because I'm like you. I grew up in a household where the dog slept outside. I now have my dog sleeping on the bed. And, as a first fellow Labrador owner,
yeah.
I mean, you can understand just what that means at 5 o'clock every morning. But the comedian Jerry Seinfeld once suggested that if aliens were watching us with telescopes and they saw our interactions with dogs, they might think that dogs were the leaders. If you see two life forms, one of them is making a poop, the other is carrying it for him, who would you assume is in charge? And I mean, all of that raises the question, how did canines go from the underdogs living these bleak lives in backyards and shelters to our pampered little overlords?
Well, I can't answer that, but what I can say is at my age, and I realized that humans are complicated people. Each person's got some agenda. You're always trying to figure out what their agendas are, but that's not true for the dogs. They are so simple in terms of, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, they are simplistic. So they just want to be with you. It's as simple as that. They've got no other agenda. And I think that's what we all like. Life with humans around is pretty complicated. You always got to watch who you're with and what you're meant to be saying. Whereas with your pet, they just love you for who you are, and we all want that.
And in a brand as well, I think that's expressed through the Rogues brand as well. It's a playfulness, it's a simplicity of functionality that you get from it as well, which is why I love the brand. But, you know, coming out, representing South Africa on the world stage and winning very prestigious, this is the World Branding Awards. I mean, you're talking about 150 brands, 41 countries competing here, over 115,000 consumers, 6 continents. I mean, this is the global pinnacle. What was it like representing South Africa on the world stage?
Well, we're happy and we're proud, but we also realize that it's been a long journey for us, and many people have played a role in that. Our foreign customers, our foreign suppliers, they're all part of it. We've got a big team in Cape Town, so it's an award that's shared by many. It's shared by all of our loyal supporters in South Africa and other countries that have been buying the product year after year, even while we were making mistakes. So it is certainly a proud moment for us in our history. But we realize we still have a lot of hard work lying ahead. Where you can never rest on that one award and think it's going to keep the doors open. So we also don't want to take it too seriously.
What was? I mean, you've made mistakes on the way. What's one mistake that stands out for you? Maybe a Madonna-themed burlesque outfit, perhaps, that you designed that didn't fly off the shelves for your pampered poodle. What is the one mistake that stands out for you?
Oh, there'll be many, but one that I think the whole team will remember is at one stage we were making products for Walmart. That was still before the pet industry, and I probably blew something like 2 months worth of turnover just on a printing error. At that stage, 2 months worth of turnover was probably the year's worth of work to recover. And on a tiny little printing error, we had to throw all the items away. So we've had many of those mistakes, and with the culture that we're trying to generate is one where we claim our mistakes and we can learn from them as fast as possible and correct them. But there's certainly not an environment where we make no mistakes that we have realized.
Yeah, and I think to grow is to make mistakes, to be able to have a culture that says, well, you're going to innovate, you're going to iterate quickly, and with that comes mistakes, but also lots of successes and lots of products that people are absolutely going to love. You now have taken the decision, you're a global business, but to bring your manufacturing process back to South Africa. Why did you take that decision at a time when, let's face it, I think quite a few people are rather gloomy about the outlook in the country? What really underpinned that thinking?
There's a lot that set us onto that direction, but I just wanted to touch base on your previous question. Is now that we've manufactured the majority of our items in our own factory and factories around us, we can control quality so much quicker. There's so many other instances where a container arrives at a customer overseas that we never saw the product being made in a foreign country, and by the time it arrives, there's a quality issue that's way more complicated for us to correct. But the main reason, Michael, that we made the decision way back in 2016, 2017 is from our perspective, we saw a change in the world environment where sourcing in Asia has become quite commonplace and products are looking more and more similar, and all competitors in the same fields, products are iterations of each other. Our roots are obviously in South Africa, so we can't replicate that anywhere else, and we just figured we'll reinvest in our own manufacturing plant here. We've set up a few plants around us to assist us in volumes. And now we can supply things from one central warehouse. A big thing that we find that our customers like is our uniquely African flavor. Many of them come and visit. They come to our factory. They see the staff sing Shor Shaloza and Nkosi Sikelela. And they leave it in tears. And they've got strong relationships with our business. So for us, being uniquely African is a point of differentiation. We're not arguing that we're necessarily always better, or definitely not worse, but we are unique, and that's what many customers want, just as something special that their competitors can't have. So it's been a few years journey for us to reset up stronger and more diversified manufacture in South Africa, and it's serving us very well in this time.
But I think you're also touching on a key trend that's happened through COVID is so many businesses have realized that their supply chains probably need something of a rethink because we see so much made in China or Southeast Asia and that has really been upended through the pandemic. What impact has the pandemic also had on your customers' desire to go out and splash out on their pooches? Because just doing a very unscientific look around my neighborhood, there are probably more pet stores than there are toy stores around the place.
It could well be. So yes, I think people are spending more on their pets now because they're spending more time with their pets. And as you say, if people have adopted pets, you struggle to find pets. That's the one side of it. And I think I'm not an economist, but I would argue quite strongly that after a period of extensive globalization focus with everybody wanting to just buy centrally, post-lockdown, there's a sentiment around the world about buying more local items. And dare I say there's an anti-China sentiment. I'm not saying it's at their detriment. We've got good suppliers there, good friends, but people want to buy from alternate sources. And in that context, our offering is welcomed by our customers.
It's certainly great to hear that you are bringing the factory and the manufacturing back and the job creation that comes along with that. We do know the economy is tough. We're not economists, but we can see the job losses, the mom and pops, particularly in the hospitality and retail space. Do you think established companies in South Africa, if we just look at this through the entrepreneurial lens, are doing enough in terms of mentoring and supporting up-and-coming entrepreneurs?
No, I dare say that we probably all should and could do more. We're not a large enterprise, but we try and be as strong a player in our community. We've got an academy that's been running since 2013 where we're involved in education in four schools in the area, as well as youth development and also urban farming all the way around our farm. Factories, the curbs are being farmed and food's being distributed. So there's many ways of playing a role. I think South Africa's got phenomenal resources and phenomenal people, and it is important for every small business such as ourselves at root level to develop people. We can't wait for politicians alone to get it right, and I'm not sure if corporates alone are going to get it right. I think everybody's got their role to play. We can't have as big levers that we can pull as the politicians can or the corporates can, but we should certainly do something that's within our reach.
Absolutely, within your own circle, and all of those ripples taken together could lead to something of a tsunami of change. I love that attitude. Yeah. We can't sit around and wait for Pretoria to take the lead here, Irene, and that's why I love the Rog story as well. Just one last question. What's your top-selling item?
Our core focus is collars and leashes. That's been our roots in this industry, and although we've diversified over the many years, we have stuck true to that focus, and that still remains our top-selling range.
There you have it, co-founder of Rogs, the very famous pet care brand, Irene Robenheimer.
Hot 102.7 Business with Michael Avery.